אתם עם SBS בעברית.
Paul Israel, welcome to SBS Hebrew.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
Paul, you've got quite an interesting story. You are Australian, but you've made Aliyah to Israel where you live, and you've been living for quite a while now. And you're the head of the Israel-Australia Chamber of Commerce located in Tel Aviv. Tell me a little bit about your journey and the osmosis of how you ended up in Israel and how you got into this job.
So great to be here. So Paul Israel is the name. Born in Melbourne, went to Mount Scopus, moved to Israel with my parents when I was 14. I did high school in Israel and then was conscripted into the army. I served 3 years in a tank unit, which was quite the experience, which I really enjoyed. High school years were challenging as a teenager moving here. And also the economy was at a really challenging moment. When I came, there was like 400% inflation, double-digit employment touching like 20%. So leaving, you know, the eastern suburbs of Doncaster to come here was tough as a teenager. But things sort of turned around for the economy, which is part of what I do now, which I'm going to touch on a bit later. So finished the army, went back to Australia to study, did arts marketing at Monash. And I was very involved in AUJUS, Australian Union of Jewish Students, and led a few student groups to here, which was terrific. And then I saw an ad in the Jewish News for executive director role at the Australia's Old Chamber of Commerce. And I was very lucky to get that role. I served there for 3 years and then came back to live in Israel. So I'm 55, been in Israel now all up 34 years. Most of my career is with the chamber. I have an Israeli wife, 3 boys were born here. One just finished the army 2 weeks ago. One's currently in and one's in year 11, and that's me sort of in a nutshell.
Can you tell us, Paul, what the role of a chamber of commerce is in any country, in any city, anywhere?
We're one of 60 bilateral chambers in Israel. You have bilateral chambers also in Australia, like Australian Spanish Chamber of Commerce and Australian Greek Chamber of Commerce. And above and beyond, they're non-profit organizations whose mandate is to promote bilateral trade, so two-way trade, and relations between the countries. Most chambers don't get any government support. They live off their activities and support. We have 5 sister chambers in Australia who are called the Australia-Israel Chamber of Commerce, and I'm from the Israel-Australia. They're an amazing organization with a presence in Brisbane, Sydney, Melbourne, Adelaide and Perth, and we're their sister chamber here.
Do they act as separate entities or do they act as one entity with different branches?
We're separate but work together for the same objective and share resources and help each other out when we can. But really each chamber runs its own sort of balance sheet and profit and loss. It has its own board and CEO at each state, but work together where we can.
Paul, I'd say that you're at a pretty good interface to give us a little bit of an explanation of the startup nation, despite the war that's happening right now. Can you give us a little bit of insight into what the startup nation is and why Israel has taken that title for itself, why it's anointed itself as the startup nation?
Just to give a bit more context, as I said, when I moved here in the 80s, the economy was literally a basket case with hyperinflation and high unemployment. In the early 90s, a whole lot of things happened that Israel took advantage of and things worked in its favor. So the Soviet Union collapsed. We had 1 million Soviet Union Jews move here in a decade, and a very high percentage of them were engineers. And it was a bit of a running joke. They were either engineers or musicians. And we actually now have a result, more engineers per capita in the world, but also we have more symphonies per capita in the world as a result, really, of that Soviet Union migration. So the internet was taking off at the same time, and the Israeli government set up what's called the incubator model and the venture capital industry, and now it's one of the largest venture capital industries in the world. So you and I, Mariel, could have a great idea for a startup. If no one's funding us, it's just an idea. So the venture capital industry is the engine that funds these startups, and now we've got the envy of the world of this amazing ecosystem, they call, with a high percentage of startups. We've got multinationals that are here. The universities are doing amazing work. And it's all relevant to the future of Australia, which is looking to go beyond the resources and raw materials Hence, you know, we became very pivotal in helping Australia evolve its own high-tech innovative ecosystem.
I just want to backtrack a little bit there, because I have always wondered why it is that Israelis are so good with technology. Is it because they were brought into the army from a young age and therefore they're somehow exposed to technology from a younger age than other people are?
So it's a mixture of a few things. You have what's called like the hard facts, and then you have like the cultural components. So the hard facts are, when I was going into the army, the best students were going into paratroopers and to pilots course. Now the best students are going to a unit called A200, which is actually the largest unit in the army, which is the cyber unit. And they're taking the best and brightest year 12 students into those units and giving them real life challenges to protect Israel. And what's really interesting is they're not only taking the brightest, they're taking the kids that learn the fastest, because they learn new languages, new computer languages, and new actual speaking languages, the languages spoken here in the region. And right. So the system that the IDF has developed in picking the best is something that's really interesting. But then you have the cultural elements of celebrating success, the attitude towards failure, the Jewish concept of chutzpah, which is just giving it a go and just reaching for the stars. And all these elements make up the ecosystem.
These students that go into the units like A200, they have to take aptitude tests or psychometric tests, as they call them in Israel, before they get accepted to these different courses. Is that correct?
Yes. Already in like year 10, the kids are starting to go through the physical exam, the IQ exam. What's also really interesting is the emotional intelligence. So I want to see, how are you in a group? Are you a leader? Do you know how to compromise? Do you know how to do teamwork? That's why the army just gets it right so often. It's very rare that they don't get it right. It's just an amazing mix of taking physical, IQ, and emotional intelligence together.
And then their counterparts are people from MI5, MI6.
Correct.
All these
and what's different to like an ASIO and things like in Australia is that becomes your career and you end up staying there for 10, 20, 30 years. But here, because it's part of the army service, you end up doing 3-4 years and then a new batch keep coming in. So it's just this constant renewal into the service, but then also renewal into the industry. So you get these young kids like 22, 23 who have had real problems to solve with small budgets, real deadlines, and then they go into industry. So everyone wins.
There's a proverb in Israel that says, you close a door on an Israeli and they'll find a window. Do you think that's apt?
Yeah, 100%. That's part of this chutzpah attitude where they just don't take no for an answer. And as I said before, just reach for the stars and always going for something that others would be very risk averse to doing. Some look at chutzpah and misinterpret as being aggressive. It's really more about being assertive and not being scared of the results.
And I'd conjecture also that having to live with a perpetual war in the background would have to mature you pretty quickly as well.
100%. And also it's a very multicultural society. I mean, it's a country of immigrants and now it's like second generation immigrants and it's different people from different backgrounds from North Africa to Eastern Europe. You couldn't get more opposite than that. So this melting pot also contributes.
So I want to know about your observations on the Australian startup scene. What do you see happening here and how hopeful are you for our startup ecosystem?
It's really evolved in the last decade plus. It's quite amazing how it's gone in leaps and bounds. On October 7, we were actually 13 full-time staff and we were on track to host 40 groups, mainly from Australia, all about the ecosystem. Some were looking for technology to buy, but others were looking more at the cultural aspects and looking to take back to Australia. So Australia now has a very strong venture capital industry. There's a real startup culture. And then you have some giants like the Canvas and Atlassians of the world, which even Israel doesn't have companies of that size, which are just super, super impressive, global domination, and there's role models. I mean, the biggest thing when we started this journey of sharing the ecosystem with Australia is there weren't enough role models. I think now there are significant amount of role models. There's a challenge still, I think, of getting more people from the media to buy into the importance of innovation, politics. I mean, if you look at this federal election, I'm sort of looking at it from a distance. I don't see a lot spoken about innovation. And if I have, I've missed it. But, you know, I think a lot of the leaders in Australia talk and care about innovation. There's still a way to go.
What industries do you see as the strongest links between Israel and Australia?
There's multiple. There's not really just one. The big Australian banks, the telcos are all big users of Israeli technology. Universities, there's a lot going on. The big retailers. Mining's really interesting. So mining, like the purification of water, recycling of water, Israel's world leaders in that. That's important to mining. Plus technology just in general. Autonomous vehicles, health and safety, these are big topics. And then the universities, there's a lot going on in joint research, in particular in medical and biotech, where Australia actually has some terrific wins, also commercially with the Cochlears and ResMed. So it's really very varied and diverse, which is terrific.
Do you find that with all this bilateral trade and innovation, that there's been any withdrawals or people reluctant to work with any Israeli company in the wake of October 7?
We haven't seen anything despite all the noise and everything. I mean, the only thing we've seen is that it's been challenging for people to come and visit here because of the war. But otherwise, we haven't seen a reduction at all in trade or queries or cooperation, just the actual ability to visit each other. But that's slowly coming back, which is good.
Paul, tell us about some of the trade delegations that you've got coming to Israel.
So we just had a school visit here. They had a competition in year 11 for students to pitch for a startup, and the whole year participated. And there were five winners, and they get a trip sponsored to Israel that we get to host. So we just finished that literally a few hours ago, and just really, really terrific. We've got a mission of investors coming in late May, which are looking at the ecosystem and investment opportunities. And
so what happens there? What would an itinerary look like? Just a random day?
Basically, it's a 7-day visit, 5 working days, and then 2 days on the weekend where there's tourism and we do a Shabbat dinner, Old City Jerusalem and those sort of things. But a typical day is 5-6 different meetings throughout the day. Some of the companies are presenting their story and their entrepreneurial journey. And what's interesting is often talk about their failures along the way and their hiccups and the challenges. And that's really what's inspiring for the Australian visitors. And then usually every evening there's like a dinner or reception and just heaps of networking. And so people often equate it to like drinking from a fire hose. It's just nonstop stimulants and learning and great open discussions. As you know, the culture here is very open, very casual. People are often very frank, and you can really very quickly get under the bonnet and have an interesting conversation and learn.
Is it a one-way benefit? Is it more that the recipients coming to Israel are benefiting from being there and being immersed in this startup ecosystem? Or apart from the networking, what do these Israeli companies get from involving themselves in these
It's a great question. So really it's more about learning from Israel, but often there's a lot of giving back and sharing. So for example, when we have the banks coming, the Australian banking industry from a compliance, regulatory, even technology perspective is very, very interesting. And so often there's an exchange of ideas. Australia's knowledge and intimacy with Asia, Indonesia, Malaysia is very interesting for Israel to learn from. So there is a bit of backwards and forwards, especially mining as well. We don't have much mining here at all. And so therefore, there's a lot of learning of how the mining industry actually works.
What about the gas reserves off the coast of Israel?
When they were discovered, it was like the biggest gas discovery in the world at the time. And they're being developed. So being developed, we're actually selling gas to Egypt, to Jordan, which is just hard to believe, and looking also to Europe. So we've gone from being an importer to being an exporter of energy, looking at the future and peace and strengthening our relations with our neighbours. The gas is playing a strategic role. So it's fascinating to watch.
So the gas belongs to Israel and there's a portion that belongs to Lebanon as well. Is that correct?
Correct, yeah. So they're separate gas fields and, you know, that was determined by the various borders.
Okay.
But that's the different sort of conversations.
What are your sentiments about living in Israel in a post-October 7 world?
So I'm living here by choice. I love it. I believe in what the country stands for. I love the lifestyle. I love the culture, the people, despite all the challenges. No doubt this is one of the most difficult periods in our history, but to be here and be part of the history is also important, and we're in the center of it. The country has lots and lots of challenges, but there's also amazing unified experiences, like having the hostages come home, fighting for the hostages to come home, defending the country. I mean, these are amazing things which are happening with or without you being here. So if you can be here and be part of it, part of the economy, part of the lifestyle, it's an honor. It's a real privilege.
Do you think that Israel, or at least the secular part of Israel like Tel Aviv, has taken a beating with its mojo? I heard that it's been obviously really hard to regain itself, but knowing Tel Aviv is the way I know them.
There's still an amazing vibe. You still, the beach, the promenade is just like the best in the world. Like it's still got it. But there's no doubt the lack of tourism has an effect, because, you know, we were having like, I think 3 million tourists a year, and it's gone way down. So it's missing that tourism buzz. But as I said, it's slowly coming back. But still, a lot of the cafes and restaurants are packed. You can't get in. The beach is packed, and there's still an amazing atmosphere, beach volleyball and all this sort of activity on the beach. So it's still the place to be. The weekend, the promenade's full. So it still has its mojo. And no doubt when the tourists come back, it'll just be amplified.
Do you think the tourists will come back?
They are. There's more flights. The war's now at a different stage, and hopefully we can see the end, hopefully. And from a danger perspective, it's very different and a lot safer than what it was. Even us as a chamber, we're seeing probably triple, maybe even quadruple the amount of visits for this year compared to last year.
Well, amen to that. Paul Israel, thank you so much for joining us on SBS Hebrew.
Pleasure. Take care.
עקבו אחרינו והפיצו אותנו דרך דף הפייסבוק שלנו.